let me ask you about the story that you have told. That's a really difficult story, awful story, but about the boy who you were in contact with, who was killed, shot to death. What happened?
So, you know, this little boy is similar in age to my son, brown eyes. My son has brown eyes. I see my son's face when I look at him. And this little boy, you know, he's not ISIS. He's not a combatant. This was on secure distribution site number 2. The 28th of May, our second day of doing distribution. I'm on that location. I didn't get this secondhand. I didn't see it from afar and then assume. I saw it. I touched it. I felt it. Other people saw it. This young little boy, his name is Amir. I know that because when he walked over from the crowd of people, he walked toward me. There was two of us standing there, two UG Solutions guards standing in that area. And he was walking towards us, and we thought maybe he was hurt or maybe he was asking for some more food, because all he had in his arms was a small bag of rice, half a bag of flour, some lentils that he had picked up from the ground. He didn't have much. And we thought maybe he was asking for more food or maybe he was hurt. And we notioned him over, and he came up and he extends his right hand at us. And so I kind of walked up to him and waved him over. And the guy standing next to me, this young boy, holds his hand and he kisses it. And then he comes to me and he holds my hand and he kisses it. In Arab culture, that is a very significant sign of respect. That's not something that should be taken lightly or something that should be, that's a big sign of respect. And we were taken aback by that. The gentleman that was standing next to me was also a military veteran, combat veteran. So he's been to Afghanistan and Iraq, and he was moved by it. He was touched. I was touched. And as he was standing there, we were both looking at him, and he was very emaciated. He had no shoes on. His pants were tattered. He had a kind of a rope or string holding his pants up. Filthy. Probably hasn't bathed in months. Probably hasn't eaten in days. And oh, by the way, when they walk 8 to 12 kilometers to get to these sites, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation mechanism provides no water. Zero. Not a single bottle. Because it's too expensive. Distributing water weighs so much that it breaks down the profit per cost per truck. That's a fact. Because I asked why, and I was given a lesson in it. This is why. It's too expensive. So we give them no water. All of their food, by the way, requires water to cook it. Rice, lentils, beans, flour. You gotta have water. So what we're giving them, I don't know how they're eating it, but he's standing there, and I put my arm on his left shoulder, and I look at him, and I can feel the bones in his shoulder. I can feel the weakness in his arm. I can feel the vulnerability. I can feel the desperation. And I look at him, and I got down on my knees, where I'm looking at him in the eyes. And then I say to him, I said, people care. America cares. You're not going to be forgotten. People in the world care. And he doesn't speak English, and I don't speak Arabic. But the connection we had in looking at each other, he felt for the first time in a long time that there was someone that cared. And I got down on a knee, and he came in to his level, and the items he had in his hand, he sets them down on the ground, and he raises his hands, and they're small, fragile. You can see bones sticking, you know, just the bones through the skin. And he places his hands on my face and he kissed me. And he said, he looked at me in the eyes and he says, thank you. He said it in English. Thank you. Like, people are starving in Gaza. People are dying in Gaza. These children that are starving and dying, these children, you know, they look like everyday Americans. This child is picking up noodles off the ground with his bare hands because there was no food left. So he's picking up noodles to put into his backpack. Amir goes back to the main group, and he goes out the exit. We had a very strict protocol that they come in a certain way, get the aid, and then they go out a certain way. From the way they came in, it takes them back to the way they came in. The exit takes them back that same way. So they enter from the Marat corridor. They go south. They go through the station. They exit and they go north to the Marat corridor. So coming in and going out, they're tied right back into the active combat zone. Site number two particularly is a little bit different than the other sites because it's in between site one and two. And there's an IDF combat outpost just off the corner of SDS-2. So there's a berm that lines that road going out. So if people are leaving the exit and someone is on the east side of the berm shooting into the crowd over here, you can't see what's on the other side of that berm because of the obscuration, the field of fire. So the IDF are shooting at the crowd that's leaving. As the crowd left and they would hit the Marat corridor to go west, the IDF would shoot at them, shoot at their feet, shoot over their head. We would shoot at them, shoot at their feet, shoot over their head, shoot into the air. And the bullets start hitting off the ground. There's video of this. It's on the BBC video. Hitting off the ground, see dirt flying up. And I was still on the site. I was below the berm. It was the second time we had done distribution. So when I heard the gunfire kick off, the automatic machine gun fire, I thought we were under attack. I thought something had happened. So I ran up to the southern berm and I laid down to take cover. You know, I'm observing and I'm looking and I see the shooting keep going on, like just the rap and Palestinians dropping on the side of the road. So Amir didn't make it home. He walked 12 kilometers to get some food, picked up scraps off the ground. That's all that was left because the 8-minute mayhem took all of the food. And by the time he got there, walking with no shoes, hungry and tired, the only thing left for him was to pick up some remnants off the ground. And when he left, he was killed by the IDF. Why? Because they lack discipline, they lack standards, and they lack basic human decency. Now, do I think that they intentionally shot him or shot the people they were shooting at? No. But when you use machine guns and tank rounds and mortar rounds to control a crowd, what do you think is going to happen? And the United States stands by and watches it. As in the press conference that GHF gave last night, will the IDF shoot to control the crowd? We only shoot at the crowd in the air around them or at their feet. We don't shoot into them. Unacceptable behavior. That is not how professionals behave when dealing with a civilian population. You use things like signs. What I thought would be another great, great tool would have been a loudspeaker with a microphone with an interpreter. Because no one there speaks Arabic and they don't speak English. So when you're dealing with a crowd of 8,000 to 9,000 people and you're trying to communicate with them, and I was like, how about before we start shooting, how about we do two things? One, we provide a loudspeaker with a translator. Two, we put signage. We put signs out there that say, go this way, go that way, turn left. They don't know where they're going. They don't live here. It's a war zone. So the only way I could describe the sites is death traps. And they didn't become death traps. They were designed as death traps. And the United States puts aid and we lure them in. And when they leave, they get shot at coming and they get shot at going. So the reports you hear from Nasser Hospital, which is about 5 kilometers from site number two, Nasser Hospital, that you hear all the reports of dead civilians coming in to get treated. The doctors have said this is grotesque. Doctors have testified that every time GHF does a distribution at site 1, 2, or 3, which the road from those goes directly to the Nasser Hospital, they get a massive influx of patients to what they call mass casualties, an MCI, mass casualty incident, every time.
Have you ever heard of any other country do it? I've never heard of anything like this, but I haven't spent 25 years deployed in war zones.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen this anywhere?
Anywhere to this scale. Now, in other countries that I've been in with partnered forces, are there sometimes an errant or undisciplined, you know, bad apple in the group that you discipline and you correct that behavior? I've seen that. At this scale, to where it's widely accepted, but then to also the fact that the UG Solutions contractors also do it under the guise of, well, the IDF do it, so we're fine with doing it. Never Never have I seen an American behave this way. Never have I seen an army. And I, you know, I've seen some pretty ragtag armies in my day. And never have I seen this level of depravity and just disrespect for human dignity. And it's, I mean, the word I keep using, because it's the only way I can describe it, is because America is giving tax dollars to it. It's un-American.
Thanks for watching our YouTube channel. We hope you'll subscribe to it. And by the way, you can hit the little bell on there and get notifications every time we produce a video. We hope you'll do that also.